kissed your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on the road. We're here to talk about how to improve the quality of our lives. Today, the latest information on the medicinal value of oranges. Because most people just take oranges for granted. A little bit of vitamin C. Oh, it's a lot more than that. But vitamin D can help prevent hypertension. I'll get into that as well. Also, we're going to take a look at prunes. Well, we know they're good for constipation, but they're good for a lot more than that, and there's a lot of study on that. When was the last time, if you're over 40 and a woman, that you checked your DHEA levels? You should, because you're at a greater risk of several conditions if you don't have adequate DHEA. Also, there's brand new research from the University of North Carolina showing how our cells are damaged by what are called reactive oxygen species. That's also known as oxidative stress. It's known as free radical damage. Okay. What is the issue? The issue is we can prevent it with some antioxidants. I'll share that with you. And then sugar overload can damage, big deal. We'll talk about it. So as you see, we have the latest on ways that we can help ourselves with health. It was interesting because there was a time on WMCA radio in 1976 that the station manager, Alan Strauss, set me down in front of her and said, "Now, Gary, this idea of going into these long discussions is not what radio is about, and you're not going to be popular if you do that. So every hour, you're to have three different guests, give no guests more than 7 minutes, and then have all this other information." I said, "Well, Ms. Strauss, I'm on 2 hours a day and 4 hours on Saturday. That's an awful lot of guests to have." She said, "Well, within a year, you probably wouldn't have anything more original or new to talk about." Well, we have enough information, brand new, relevant, cutting edge, that if I spent 2 hours a day full time in 100 years, we wouldn't get through all of it. So no one has to worry about redundancy. It's all fresh all the time. My guest in the second part of our program today is Gerald Salante. If you haven't heard him, let your friends know that he's going to be on so they should tune in. He is the person who reads trends. He's incredibly accurate. He publishes the Trends Journal 4 times a year, and we're going to talk about what he sees coming in the next 12 months. And then I have a whole series of articles from all over the world, from the Keystone Pipeline, and how now anyone protesting will be considered a terrorist by the FBI and Homeland Security, to how Bank of America lied to homeowners and rewarded foreclosures. So every time you were lied to and they refused to refinance you or consider your plight, they were rewarded if your home was foreclosed on. It finally comes out. Elite traders are getting access to data before anyone else. Now, here's what's really interesting. The person behind all this, and this is from Bloomberg, also left some material behind at the Bilderberg Group that reveals, same identical company, reveals their stance on issues. 60 million Americans are affected by negative behavior of another person. We'll talk about that and what makes good people do bad things. As you see, we have an enormous amount to cover. We won't get through it all, but we'll get started. Let's begin. And I will be taking some calls on our talkback segment, but I have a specific area I'm going to ask for you to call in on only. Most people drink orange juice because they like the taste of it and know that it has some vitamin C, but it doesn't have a lot of vitamin C. You're lucky to get 30 to 50 milligrams in an average orange. Let's say a glass of orange juice has two oranges, maybe three, 150 milligrams the most of vitamin C. That's a tiny amount. when most of us really need, in the neighborhood of 5 to 10,000 milligrams a day. So there's clearly something more than vitamin C activity going on here. I found a new article about some of the new proven benefits of the oranges. And here's what it says. That the juice of the orange, quote, many of us mistakenly look to orange juice today as a source of high concentration of fructose or simple carbs without recognizing its profound medicinal properties. We sometimes think that we can get the vitamin C activity oranges contain through semi-synthetic nutrient ascorbic acid without realizing that an orange embodies, as do all whole foods, a complex orchestra of chemistries, the handiwork of millions of years of evolution, which is the process of intelligent biological design. The monochemical nutrient, ascorbic acid, is merely a shadow of the vitamin C activity that it is carried and expressed throughout living foods. The orange, after all, looks like a miniature sun, is formed as a condensation of energy and information from sunlight, and therefore is capable of storing and being eaten in ways that release its energy. Here's what it does. Orange juice improves the good cholesterol, raising your HDL cholesterol, and that's good. And there was a study that found that consuming a glass of orange juice a day over 4 weeks improved blood lipid profiles by lowering the bad LDL and increasing the good HDL. Orange juice boosts bone health. A study found that orange juice positively influenced antioxidant status and bone strength. If you mix black currant juice, which you could buy in any health food store in a bottle, it reduces inflammation when you mix it with orange juice. A 2009 study in patients with peripheral artery disease found that orange and blackberry or black currant juice reduced C-reactive protein and fibrinogen, two concrete measures of systemic inflammation. Another study found that orange juice neutralizes the pro-inflammatory effects of a high-fat, high-carbohydrate meal and prevents endotoxin-induced toxicity. In lay language, if someone's having a bad meal filled with animal protein and fat, like hamburger or hot dog, if they had a glass of orange juice, it would help neutralize some of that. Also, orange juice boosts weight loss. A 2011 study found that children who regularly drank orange juice consumed an average of 523 calories a day more than children who did not drink orange juice regularly. Yet surprisingly, there was no difference in the weight levels between the orange juice consuming and the non-orange juice consumers. It also helps dissolve kidney stones. A 2006 study found that orange juice consumption was associated with lower calcium oxalate supersaturation and lower calculated undissociated uric acid, two indices of lowering urinary calcium stone formation. And finally, orange juice extract suppresses prostate proliferation. Despite the fructose content, which is a natural fructose content, a study found a standardized extract of red orange juice inhibited the proliferation of human prostate cells in vitro. Then we get to the peel. Remember I told you I always use the skin and the seeds because that's where your real potent therapeutic compounds exist, and yet almost everyone throws away the skin, the pulp, and the seeds and just eats the fruit, the flesh. When you juice the pulp, you're getting pectin and flavonoids, such as hesperidin, neurogen, and quercetin, rutin, and other carotenoids. And these constitute the real powerful ones, including D-limonene, which makes up 90% of the citrus peel oil content. And that is what you get in the lemon rind, and also has strong antiviral and antibacterial qualities. In fact, the D-limonene has been studied and has potent anti-cancer properties, including against metastatic melanoma. So here's what the scientific literature shows. 2010 study found that orange peel extract significantly suppresses vaccine adjuvant-induced arthritis in a preclinical model, orange peel flavanols exhibited anti-cancer properties. 2000 study, 7 study found that orange peel extract inhibited tumorigenesis in a preclinical mouse model of adenopolyposis and programmed cell death. Another study found that orange peel extract had anti-breast cancer properties, and then the aroma of the orange. Now, we all like to smell, you know, fruit and the essence of fruit. In fact, some of the air therapies, one is orange and one is lemon and lime. Here's what they say about the aroma, which impacts our olfactory lobe, thus enabling us to have some connection between what we smell and some emotional infrastructure. It says, quote, "A study found that aroma of orange essential oil reduces anxiety, generates more positive mood, and a higher level of calmness in women exposed to it in a dental office." This finding was confirmed by additional studies. So, all good. That's why we should be using aromatherapy from natural substances, of course. And while driving not long ago in the country, I saw a huge field just bursting with the beautiful color of lavender. Now, you see this all over France and other countries that use this in their perfumery business. Not so much here in the United States. And it turned out that this was for a local cooperative where they grow the lavender and then collect it and distill it into essential oils. Kind of really cool. I wish more people did that. That would be a really neat business, and you'd probably be extremely successful at it because more and more people are using essential healing oils. Next up here, vitamin D. It can help prevent hypertension. This was a major study that was presented at the annual conference of European Society of Human Genetics and was done at the University College London. Here's what it said. Those with the highest level of vitamin D3 had the greatest reduction in blood pressure and were at the lowest risk of developing hypertension. And that's good. But we also know that vitamin D in other studies lowers our incidence of cancer, type 2 diabetes, also allergies. So it's good on all levels. And finally, prunes benefit digestive health. And this is a big deal. And this was done through the European Union. Now, we know that the prune is a wonderful accompaniment to our diet. But we're not getting enough quality fiber, especially the fruit fibers that facilitate better digestion. And in the case of the prune, it has one of the most perfect forms of fibers that help move peristalsis. In other words, clean out your intestine. You don't need a lot. Just one or two prunes will do it. And that's important. And finally, for the women in the audience, according to the American Heart Association journal Stroke, research from Harvard School of Public Health and Brigham and Women's Hospital found that there is a definite association between your DHEA level, that's a very important master hormone in your body, when it's low, you run a greater risk of stroke. So a lot of women were in this study, tens of thousands. Now, DHEA is so easy to get. It's inexpensive. 20 milligrams, not hard to get. But people aren't getting it, and that's where a lot of your other hormones are actually created. So get your DHEA levels checked if you're over 40. And then it's so easy to supplement with a low dose, and that would help you. Now, for a couple issues, I'd like for you to call in and share your points of view. And there are two that I'm going to ask you to address. The first comes from the Daily Reporter, and it says, quote, "What makes good people do bad things?" Their answer, money. quote, can make people behave unethically. The results of the study found people would engage in insider trading and lying if they stood to gain financially. But they would not if there was no money involved. And the mere prospect of cash can make unethical behavior much more likely. And researchers in the University of Utah and Harvard University found that this was the case. Promise people money, and you can change their behavior. The study, quote, found that when people stood to gain financially, they were much more likely to behave unethically than otherwise. Quote, we were interested in why good people would do bad behavior. But they do. And I don't think we had to have a study from Harvard to know that. We see it all the time in people promising us if we vote for them and they go to Congress, they will do the public's bidding. And you ask them a simple question. We don't have a massive rail system in the United States. They do in China. They have trains in China that are levitation-based trains that can go 240 miles an hour, and now they're looking at 300 miles an hour, and they have 5,500 miles of these trains that move massive amounts of their population. In the United States, when Reagan started making tax cuts because of big government, much of that was side-railed. As a result, we have a decrepit public transportation system that is always breaking down and always being subsidized. Had we had a real effort, then we would have alleviated an enormous amount of the pollution because we would have had people being able to go from point A to point B in non-polluting ways, and so they wouldn't be driving, and they would get there quicker than what if they were driving, and all the congestion would be alleviated. We chose not to do that. Then again, other countries are putting money into their water systems. We're not. They're trying to build, the Dutch in particular have been very good at this, locks that prevent major tidal waves from coming in. We haven't. Our entire coast from one end to the other is completely vulnerable, as we've seen, and it's only going to get worse. Our bridge recently collapsed in the United States, but most of our bridges are at the point of collapsing. We have aging infrastructures that we haven't put any money into because, quote, that's government spending. Yes, and that's government spending that would benefit the commons, all of us. We've allowed schools to become decrepit. We have ghettoized urban areas. We are now ghettoizing the suburban areas. We have abandoned most of American small farms. We don't put energy into renewable energies in local communities. But we have no problem. These very same Blue Dog Democrats and corporate Republicans have no problem putting unlimited amounts of money into the military-industrial complex, the spy complex, and major energy resources. Too bad for that. Here is the second issue I'd like to address. And why do you think they do that? It's about money. Because someone's promised them that support this particular philosophy and you will be rewarded. This is from Sandra Brown from Psychology Today. 60 million people in the United States, negativity affected by someone else's pathology. I'll quote this. Do you believe someone else's pathology is none of your business? Or it's simply an unfortunate turn of events for the person in a pathological love relationship? Or that what happens to someone else doesn't affect you? What happens because a pathology affects us all? An astute student asked, how many people does pathology negatively affect? We did the math. 304 million people, 1 in 25, will have the disorders associated with no conscience, which includes antisocial personalities and sociopathy and psychopathy. Well, that's about 60 million people affected by the 12 million that have no conscience. And each antisocial, antisocial and pathological disorder negatively affects about five partners with their pathology. If existing medical conditions like diabetes or heart disease or more readily recognized conditions like depression, which affect about 60 million people, you'd have an outcry. But you don't. And it isn't the end of telling the human path of destruction. The 16 million negatively affected by pathology figure does not include children harmed. And since psychopaths, another form of pathology, are hypersexual, they tend to have a lot of children, and that could affect another 30 million more. And so when you look at all this, it doesn't even include the narcissist, which I figure personally represent about 5% of the American population. Almost all of your adaptive aggressives and adaptive assertives dynamic aggressives and dynamic assertives are narcissistic, and they really affect people. They affect everyone in their lives. So I think their figure of affecting 1 in 5 is out the window. And then one day you realize, gee whiz, you end up with cognitive dissonance, intrusive thoughts, sleep disruptions. Then people start using alcohol. They have concentration problems, depression, anxiety. The emotional impact of the aftermath symptoms leaves 50% of the affected people frequently with post-traumatic stress disorder. That's almost equal to the percentage of war vets who return home with post-traumatic stress disorder. And the emotional aftereffects, the work environment. Almost 50% of the people negatively affected by the pathological find their work performance negatively affected as they struggle to manage the aftermath symptoms. Some drop from full-time to part-time just so they can cope. It affects children, and it affects a lot of people. So here's the bottom line to this, and this is my question. We now know that what we think and what we put out into the universe can and will impact other people. We know that how we're treated, if you are yelled at, if you're demeaned, if someone writes you a negative note, leaves toxic messages on your email, not once in a lifetime, but on a regular basis, we can become a part of that person's energy. And once you become a part of a person's energy, if they are toxic and negative, we then have that impact us in a very serious way. That is dangerous. And yet we never discuss this. If we did, then look at the entire efforts of Congress of keeping an entire nation terrified so they can shred the Constitution, Bill of Rights, and keep us in a virtual police state and allow fascism to run amok. That's part of this pathology. What about megalomaniac television commentators with their own popular shows on cable? Think of that. Think of the Rush Limbaughs and what they do. Almost every word out of that man's mouth is negative, blaming liberals or progressives or socialists for the world's problems, never taking responsibility for his own mental rants. But think of what it does to the people that absorb that and then pass it on to others. Then you see how a whole nation can act in the wrong way.
Love me tender, love me sweet, never let me go. You have made my life complete, and I love you so. Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill.
Now, how in the world would those lyrics apply to those who enjoyed 50 Shades of Grey? Love me as you beat me is what that book says, and think of what it says to the people who need that. Whoa. Let's go to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary.
By the way, we won't have time for any more talk back at this time. We'll take them later. Hi, Luann.
Hello. Well, we have been getting so many calls for the retreat, I have to tell you. You know how a lot of people say to me, how can we find like-minded people? I would love to be around groups of people that we can talk out and discuss issues with that aren't going to be defensive. And well, I tell you what, I think we've got two great groups coming to your retreat in Texas. So I think we have a couple of spots left for the second week. I know the first week is full up. It is packed. And may, you know, I don't know. You might have the list. I don't. Is there any openings in the second week?
The first week, there is no room. The second week, we have three. Let me put this in perspective, because we have people by the thousands listening for the first time every day. It's been a year and a half since I did a retreat, and it was a wonderful experience. We've done between 300 and 400, and going clear back to those magnificent days on the Fertler Farm upstate in Stone Ridge, New York, where we'd sit around a big campfire at night, 50 people, and sing, and we go on nature hikes and commune with nature, make soy, all kinds of wonderful things. That's where it began. It's evolved. I wanted to take the best of being able to get people to de-stress and relax, to detoxify, to cleanse and rebalance, rejuvenate in 1 or 2 weeks so they can, in effect, change their life. And to do that, it requires time and focus. You can read a book and do it. You can watch a video and do it. You could even listen to a discussion and do it if you're highly motivated. But the reality is, for most people, with all the things going on in their life, all their responsibilities and their schedules, they're not going to do it. They'll do little bits and pieces. They'll run out for yoga class. So instead, here, all day, there's up to 3 yoga classes. People can attend what they want. But with master teachers, each one of the yoga teachers I've selected, and there are 3 I've selected, each one teaches yoga teachers. That's how good they are. From beginning to advanced, meditation with Qigong, including moving energy, healing energy, from a person that's a Qigong master who spent 35 years doing this, and not one of these faux finished people who take a weekend workshop and come away thinking somehow they're able to heal. Gourmet vegan cooking classes in the morning, and then a separate chef and gourmet raw food classes in the afternoon. Juicing to your heart's content with fresh, delicious juices to help the body rebalance. Individual personalized exercise sessions. Soaking in mineral baths that I haven't had since the old Healing Springs Ranch down in Tioga, Texas, that people absolutely loved. You'd lay in that water for an hour and you felt like you just had a 2-day massage, because this mineral water is even richer. And art is healing classes with artists who've been practicing for at least 30 years. They're 30 and 40 years. To teach people how to use art to heal. Personal counseling by you. Each person gets their own private session. I'm doing workshops in the evening, including homesteading workshops. And I've reevaluated, based on all the things happening in the world, the best places to live and where I see the most potential for a positive, sustainable future. And I've had to make some adjustments. I'll be sharing that and how to get from plan A to plan B in your life and how to have a system in effect.
Well, I think all the classes are building up to that, how to ground your energy, how to really, real hands-on practical information about how to create your life so that you can live optimally healthy, optimally happy, no matter what's going on the planet. I think that's, people are really clamoring for that.
People are wanting change. People want to change their life because they see what's happening to them. They're seeing the disintegration of values, standards, quality of life. They're seeing the intrusiveness of government. They're seeing sickness. They're seeing aging. They're seeing their own mortality. When you wake up one day and you hit 40, 50, 60, 70, you realize you're on the backside of life. You realize the day will come when there's no more days. And then you ask, what should I be doing with this? Should I waste my time? Should I watch television? Should I social network into oblivion, where most mind-dead people spend their time when they don't have a life? Right? Well, it's true. Or do they want to make their life relevant? This is what this retreat is about. So a person will be there to do as much as they want, as little as they want, but it's focused on detoxing, rejuvenation, yoga, meditation, and cooking, but more than what you would get if you went away to just a cooking camp or a yoga camp or a, and this is not that bare bones, down on your luck environment. This is one of the most
tend to a room, share one bathroom.
Yeah, we've seen those. I was actually at a yoga retreat upstate where 60 people were sleeping on mats on a floor of a gym, not because they couldn't afford it, because all the money was going to this so-called nonprofit yogi, who, you know, was in it for a different reason. You know, here there's phenomenal environment. I mean, you would, when you're there, you're going to think that you're in the beautiful 18th century Italy. That's what it reminds you of, the big, beautiful marble columns and fountains. Nothing like it in the United States. Anyhow, there's room for three if you want to come, and it's a fundraiser for this non-commercial radio station. So you can call this number. I'm going to let me get the number here from our engineer for people to call in, and then you'll speak with Jeremy, I'm assuming.
I think it's 877-627-5065.
877-627-5065. I'll be there for the full 2 weeks, 877-627-5065. It's going to change people's lives. It's what a lot of people need, and it's very, very inexpensive. It's one-third the price of any place else we could find that was comparable in the United States, because you looked over 100 places, and that's when you said... And I said, I want it to be able to be affordable to people. I'm not charging for my time. I know you're not charging for your time. We're doing this to help people. So that's why it's as affordable as it is. It's only $2,000 for the week. And that includes the hotel. And they pay for their airfare and getting to the villa, and everything else is covered from there, except if they want private massage. And there will be a massage therapist there. And I think a mineral soak, but everything else is no charge extra. So call 877-627-5065 if you want to change your life and have one of the most beautiful, healing, rejuvenative, rebalancing, clarifying, refocusing experiences. It'll happen. It will absolutely happen. So, but it doesn't happen if you don't get there. And too often people have given every excuse why they can't do something, and they never give themselves a reason to do something. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
Back in a moment with my guest, Gerald Salante. Please stay with us.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie Heath, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with his teeth, babe, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears old Maggie Heath, babe, so there's never, never a trace of red. Now on the sidewalk, ooh, it's Sunday morning, lies a body.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, on the road. In Rhinebeck, New York, is Gerald Salante. Gerald is one of the handful of trends forecasters at his Trends Research Institute in Kingston, New York, and the publisher of the Trends Journal, which he's published since 1980. And he is one of those worldwide expert diagnosticians and forecasters and independent thinkers who lets us know what's coming, and he has been so right on. Nice to have you with us today, Gerald.
Well, thanks for having me back, Gary.
Gerald, here's what we're going to do today. I'm going to read a brief headline and maybe a paragraph from an important article, and I'd like you to give us a synopsis of your insights on it, all right?
Okay.
Okay. We've been saying for a long time, you and I on this program, that we are seeing the decay of the suburban and urban environment, and it's going to be tipping, but not all at once, but it will not stop because we will not pay attention to it. This today from Bloomberg: Detroit citizens protect themselves after police force decimated. Quote, as crime hobbles Detroit, attempts to revive itself, the city is bolstering its police department by having unarmed civilian patrols to go on the streets in a program that costs less than the annual salaries and benefits of 3 police officers. Volunteers given radios and matching T-shirts help officers protect neighborhoods where burglary, thefts, and thugs drive away people who can't rely on a police force that lost a quarter of its strength since 2009. Now, then on Friday, the mayor of Detroit said that they are going to default on all non-secured debt. That's about $5 billion. And they're only giving 10 cents on the dollar to secured debt. And I just did the math on that. That means that those people living on their pensions, police department and firefighters and school teachers and office workers, everyone who thought that they had some income, now that that can go out the window in a bankruptcy filing, there's going to be even greater default. And I believe bankruptcy is imminent in Detroit. And then I believe once Detroit, the largest city in America, to ever declare bankruptcy, I believe that we're going to start seeing a lot of that. And then we're just going to see the substantial increasing collapse of the American landscape. Your thoughts?
There used to be an old saying, Calvage Coolidge days, the business of America is business. The business of America has now become everybody watching everybody else's business and getting our nose in their business, and the business of America is war and all that goes with it. The business of China is waging business. So as we're watching our economies dissolve in front of us, people aren't aware of where it's going to lead because they still think this is the old America that they used to believe in. You're talking about Detroit. You just look at some of the things going on there. Their population, Gary, has fallen by 63%. It was once the fourth largest city in the U.S., and in 1960, not so long ago, it had the highest per capita income in the entire nation. 60% of the children in the city of Detroit are living in poverty. And you go around, I mean, look at what's going on in the United States. It's the, you're looking at poverty rates and homeless levels and wage declines. It's going on all over the country. You, Detroit, Camden, Trenton, East St. Louis, go around the country. Go around to a neighborhood in a city near you and watch it decay. So we're just going to keep seeing more of this because actually we're putting it together our mid-year economic trend forecast. And to sum it up, it'll be coming out in detail in a few weeks. The Federal Reserve is going to keep this Ponzi scheme going as best they can through the Christmas holidays, and that means printing more money and keeping interest rates as low as they can, even though they're going up. They're very important that they make the Christmas holidays seem good. At some point, they're going to have to raise interest rates and pull back on the so-called quantitative easing. When that happens, you're going to see the economy really begin to crash at levels that were back in 2008 levels. The only thing, as you well know, that's been keeping this going are the $12 trillion that the central banks have pumped into the economy. So what's going to happen next? As the economy continues to decline, after they cut back any tapering of quantitative easing and interest rates come up to levels where you could no longer afford to buy houses cheaply, they're going to loosen it again. And this time when they ease it, you're going to see hyperinflation that the people have been forecasting for a long time really set in.
All right. Then my follow-up to that, let's try to make them shorter. Right now, the strength of the dollar is what most people are relying upon for their future in the United States, to hold the value of their property up, even though it's a bubble, to hold the value of bonds up, even though that's a bubble, the entire bond market, and to keep us from having another great fall. But isn't it true that China and South Korea and Russia and India and all these other nations are trying to get away from the dollar as a reserve currency to have their own mixed currencies? And isn't that inevitable? And what is the likely outcome when the dollar within the next 1, 2, 3, or 4 years is no longer the reserve currency? What's going to happen to the value of our homes, our cars, the value of the money that we take home each week from our paychecks?
Well, again, it's the debasement of the currency by all the so-called quantitative easing and stimulus is just printing cheap money. But here's the rub. It doesn't go that simply because the United States is going to start raising interest rates. As they raise interest rates, you're going to start seeing the hot money that was flowing into China, not China, but into India, Brazil, Australia, and other countries where they had higher interest rates. Now there are outflows going out. So by raising interest rates, they're going to prop up the dollar at some point. But again, it's only going to be short term. And the second part of your question about China and the BRIC companies, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, building another reserve currency, yes, it's going to happen. And as it happens, the dollar is going to lose its value as a reserve currency. And that's exactly when you're going to see the hyperinflation and that everything is going to cost much, much more and be worth much, much less.
Next issue. This just came out today. We've been saying all along that the national security state has been listening to all of our phone calls, reading all of our emails, and yet all the resources of Fox News and the very limited intellectual resources of Bill O'Reilly and company couldn't find any proof that your actual phone calls were actually listened to, nor the FBI has any nefarious history of listening to phone calls or provoking acts and doing anything illegal, nor any evidence of anyone reading your emails. I couldn't believe when I heard this. This is today, just today. Quote, foreign politicians and officials who took part in two G20, those are the top 20 countries in the world, including the United States and Britain and France and Germany and England and Russia, meeting in London, had their computers monitored and their phone calls intercepted on the instructions of the government host. According to documents seen by The Guardian, some delegates were tricked into using internet cafes which had been set up by intelligence agencies to read their email traffic. The revelations come as Britain prepares to host another summit today for the G8 nations, those are the eight most important nations, all of whom attended the last meetings, which were the object of systematic spying. It is likely to lead to some tensions among visiting delegates who want to the prime minister to explain whether they were targets in 2009 and whether the exercise to be repeated this week. And then it goes on to say what they actually did. And this was known to the United States in the National Security Agency. And this is what the whistleblower Edward Snowden said was the tip of the iceberg, along with Glenn Greenwald. And this, and what they shared this point, it's just a tiny fraction. This is where it's getting interesting. Quote, they supplied 45 analysts with live round-the-clock summary who was phoning up at the summit, targeting a prime minister, receiving reports from the National Security Agency, attempt to eavesdrop on the Russian leader, and his phone calls passed through the satellite links to Moscow. Mind you, those are links to listen to the phone call, not just that he was making a phone call. So that's what we have now today, that they have been listening to the top diplomats in the world at their own meetings. And that's much like the exposure that was made from WikiLeaks that Hillary Clinton had instructed all of her embassies to steal or get information on the diplomats, including cell phones, credit card information. This is really embarrassing. This shows that we've been listening to their phone calls, reading their emails, getting everything we can from them. Your thoughts?
Why should they be any different than us? I mean, if they're listening to all of our emails and our conversations, I mean, they're entitled to listen to anybody in the world. I mean, that's the way Big Bro thinks. And I have to tell you, I get a kick out of all the noises being made about the Snowden release on the surveillance that they've been doing on us. Go back to the spring issue of the 2012 Trends Journal. Without the public really noticing or caring enough to notice, Obama's 2012 had become Orwell's 1984. Big Brother had arrogated to himself full power to do as he pleased. So what? What was the big deal? Does anyone really care? Why should anybody have to know about the NDAA and the NDRP executive order? With bills to pay, mouths to feed, and jobs to find or keep, family health and personal problems, Washington was a world away. Actually, Washington was everywhere and affected everything. Washington had a cradle-to-grave death taxes grip on virtually every major and minor detail, and we go on and on about all of the spying. U.S. eases rules on use of data on Americans. One after another, we outlined it in chapter and verse, how they are watching us, everything that we do. And we said there was no longer a right to privacy. So we say the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. Of course, that was the Fourth Amendment. That's the Fourth Amendment, and that's gone. It's gone. And then when you, Gary, when you really look at this, it's not about intelligence. It's not about surveillance. It's really not that much about that as we see it. It's more about the profit motive. And here's the profit motive. According to a Financial Times article last week, the United States, we the people, are spending $80 billion, that's with a B, $80 billion on so-called surveillance. And they're employing, according to an article in the New York Times, they have, of the 1.4 million people with top secret clearances, more than a third are private contractors. Do you know who the head of this guy is over there, the vice chairman of Booz Allen, the company that's been this guy Snowden
it's
worked
Clapper.
For? No. His name. He's another one on the
no,
deal.
No, he was vice president of that same company.
Oh, he was, right.
He was.
Right.
He was vice president. Then now he's the top spy master in the United States, and he lied.
Right. So,
he lied to Congress.
Right. So here's the revolving door, right? You just said he went from Booz Allen to Congress. Here's the guy that went from Bill Clinton's national security advisor, Mike McConnell, to now the head of Booz Allen, who's at that post from 1992 to 1996. And they're setting up these surveillance programs throughout the world. And by the way, of those 1.4 million people with top secret clearance, now check this out, and a third of them are private contractors, they could snoop on us, they could know all about us, but we're not allowed to know anything. And the background checks of these so-called top secret clearance people, you know who does it? Other military contractors. So that's what I'm saying. This is about money. It's another branch of the military-industrial complex.
Okay. Let's go on to other topics. From Steve Horn, the Smog blog, Keystone activists labeled possible echo terrorists in internal TransCanada documents. Quote, documents recently obtained by Bold Nebraska show that TransCanada, owner of the hotly contested Keystone tar sands pipeline, has colluded with the FBI and Department of Homeland Security Fusion Center in Nebraska, labeling non-violent activists as possible candidates for terrorism charges and other serious criminal charges. Further, the language in some of the documents is so vague that it could also ensnare journalists, researchers, and academics as well. And now, as we warned, they're going to make every act of disobedience, no matter how peaceful, against any corporation or any agency of government, they're looking to make these as terrorist acts, and all under Obama's complete authority.
Again, it all ties together. Oh, by the way, two of the top aides now in Keystone and putting this deal together, a couple of them came from the State Department because, you know, they're the ones that have to be doing the clearance. So some of them came from Hillary Clinton's State Department, and other ones came from working with John Kerry, who is, of course, now the head of the State Department. But he was a senator then, so now they're on board with Keystone. Again, it all goes back to money. I've said this from the very beginning when we saw the panic of 08 hit. Too big to fail. Those were the four words that kill capitalism. The merger of state and corporate powers is called fascism. That's all this is about. The corporations are in control. It's been a takeover. Whether it's Booz Allen, Keystone, Goldman Sachs, name them. So anytime we step out of line, they make sure we get back in line. And that's what you do under fascism. And that's what America has become.
Okay. Bank of America lied to homeowners and rewarded foreclosures. Former employee safe. Quote from ProPublica, Paul Keel. Bank of America employees regularly lied to homeowners seeking loan modifications, denied their applications for made-up reasons, and were rewarded by sending homeowners to foreclosure, according to sworn statements by former bank employees. The employee statements were filed late last week in federal court in Boston as part of a multi-state class action suit brought on behalf of homeowners who sought to avoid foreclosure through the government's Home Affordable Modification Program, but say they had their cases botched by Bank of America. And, quote, so now understand, when the government passes a rule that says we'll help you if you have problems with your home, this is saying the Bank of America, by the way, which has been working with Homeland Security and gets documents from Homeland Security and work with the New York police and had their own employees there to see that anyone at Occupy Movements was put into the database. Mind you, Bank of America, Citicorp, Goldman Sachs, all working with Homeland Security. That's the fascism you're talking about. But here they lied, out and out lied to homeowners. And that way, when the more of these houses went into foreclosure, the more the employees were paid. Your thoughts?
Again, you know, go back to all of those lawsuits that happened with J.P. Morgan Chase, with Goldman Sachs, one after another on the financial crimes, and you haven't seen one head roll, and you won't see one roll now. It's the, again, look at the LIBOR scandal, where they rigged the interest rates to the tune of $600 trillion worth of exchanges going on. You haven't seen any heads roll. So this is just more of the same. It's a footnote in the high crimes and misdemeanors being created by the financial mafia. As I say, Gary, there are two mafias that are running this, two families, two crime families, the military-industrial complex mafia and the money changers mafia. And the politicians are nothing more than wise guys for both of them. And all of the troops and the police have become enforcers for their crime bosses. Okay. So when you talk about what they do to the people on Occupy, it's the same thing all the time.
Gerald, last question. When I look at what I'm seeing ahead of us, in all official institutions, local, state, and federal governments corrupted to the core, bureaucracies bloated and metastasized out of control, our rights being completely challenged, and yet the complicit corporate Democrats and Republicans looking the other way and talking about border patrols rather than the illegal eavesdropping. What do you see coming as far as the average working American over the next 2 years, the value of gold and silver, the what's facing us as far as our place in the world, especially since we refuse to acknowledge what we've done wrong in Libya and now Syria, and your thoughts on these? Thank you.
On gold and silver. Gold prices and silver are going to continue to be under pressure, and I don't expect them to rise to back past their old heights until after they raise interest rates and then they lower them again and pump money. And so I believe there's going to be a temporary pause, but there are wild cards. Geopolitical could be one of them, and Syria is the one to look at. On the other issues about what to expect from the American worker and how their lives are going to be, it's going to be more of the same but worse. Again, just look at the data. You don't have to be a trend forecaster. The jobs that have been lost since the panic of 08 hit have been middle wage paying jobs. The jobs that have been created are low paying. You look at the data when they made a big deal last month with the new jobs that were created, and you look at them. Most of them were temporary work, no pensions, no benefits, no nothing, and no hours working. And then the other ones were waiters and bartenders, ambulatory and healthcare services. We had loss in manufacturing. So it's going to be continued decline. My most concern is, and it's in the news now, but it's, as you mentioned, they're talking more about border patrols and gay marriages, is what's going on in Syria. And I believe when all else is lost, as I've said before, they take you to war. And I believe war is on the horizon. And this is going to be, as Einstein said, you know, that wonderful quote, you know, that the next world war will be fought, how it will begin, but he knows that I can tell you that we'll use what they will use in the fourth, rocks. And people have to have rocks in their head to keep letting the same people, the military-industrial complex and the governmental sociopaths that brought us Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Iran wars, now bring us to Syrian war. So that's what we see happening.
I appreciate once again your insights, Gerald. It's not a pretty picture. It is bleak for those who choose not to see the truth. It is a positive picture for those who want to get out of the way and create a better world by disconnecting from this gigantic metastasis that is controlling our lives. Thank you very much for all you do.
Thank you, Gary.
Gerald Celente, Celente. He is in Rhinebeck, New York, and publisher of the Trends Journal. You can go to trendresearch.com is the website, trendresearch.com. We're out of time. Thank you very much for listening. Then let's say hello to Eutrice Leed. Hi, Eutrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about, we're doing media literacy today, talking about the media, the messenger, and the message, the NSA story in black and white.
Good. We look forward to that.
Eutrice
Leed, right now on Progressive Radio Network, which, by the way, on Saturday, when I Googled it, had 42 million hits on Saturday. Stay tuned for Eutrice Leed.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so like the lady with the mystic smile. Is it all?